It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, ordinarily this is where I would play up all the exciting things that happened at breakfast so that people would subscribe to our Behind the Pancakes premium content, but William hasn't watched Wings of Desire yet, so mostly we just talked about sex and how the things that make William a bad human also make him a good therapist. And that was pretty much the entire conversation. So.
Wow, I wouldn't have summed it up that way. Maybe that's accurate. I don't know.
I mean, we've always known you are a bad human. And it seems like you are being a very successful therapist. And so it's not too hard to just associate a link there.
Okay.
We're dealing with facts, and then we're seeing about how they might correlate. That's all.
I should just give up on the human part.
Nobody's questioning your terrible human being.
Yeah, I should just give up on the human part.
Yeah.
Lean into the therapist part.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I assumed you did years ago.
No.
My dealings with you for the past several years give no indication that you are attempting to be a human.
Okay, well, that's just an indicator of how poorly I've been doing. Okay.
As I said at breakfast, you're an automaton.
You're not the first person to call me that. You're not the first person.
I might have meant it different, but whatever. There are ways that you can say things that express what you need to say. And I find that if there's a way I could do that while also making you feel bad, it's just win-win.
Win-win. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All me. Both of the wins are mine. Sorry. Sorry, it's win-win. I don't, and you're there too. I don't know how. I don't consider your side of the thing because don't care. But it's two wins for me.
Double winning, yeah.
Double winning, twinning. by winning, whatever Charlie Sheen used to.
What did he say?
Remember how we talked about how proud we were that we weren't talking about Charlie Sheen, and then somebody, I think Azhatalin, wrote in and made us talk about Charlie Sheen?
Yeah, I remember that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast with one bad human and one terrible human, and you can figure out which is which. Do you use your powers for good or for awesome? I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 717.
Yes. I always get confused now because I post the episode the day before, so I'm like, no, it's 716. I just did it. But that's the point. You did it, and now it's this.
I just did it.
Because I was like, it's 7:16. What do you think? Well, no, that was yesterday. Yeah. A.K.A. a week ago. It's very confusing.
I also was confused for a second there.
For those of you joining us for the first time, this is as good as it's going to get. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Sometimes people write into that email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com with notes, topics, comments, things like that. Sometimes they wish them to be anonymous. And in that instance, we are learning it is very important to put something about that up near the top of the email because we do not pre-screen these because the hat all on its own magically forwards the emails to us and then we talk about them.
They're not our emails. They're the hat's emails.
Yes. So. Yeah. It's important to put that up early, or else William could fog up everything.
Now, to be fair,
I wish there were fewer sentences that I have to end that way. Or else William might fuck up everything.
Yeah. To be fair, when they used to come out of the actual hat with little note cards, if they were supposed to be anonymous, there was no name.
No name on it.
They were anonymous to us.
But the hat decided that. I assume it was like an indigestion thing of manifesting them physically within the hat itself.
Yeah, forwards the emails to us, and so now we know who the person. We know they're not anonymous to us anymore. They're just anonymous, like on the.
Also, it was such an overwhelming majority that didn't ever seem to care. And there, we have so few listeners that write in. I think at a certain point we just all started assuming everybody's fine with it. But sometimes you're not, and that's okay. But we read top to bottom, so start at the beginning, make sure we know. Anyway, so we're going to have to retread a lot of shit here from breakfast. How was your various Thanksgivings?
Well, as I told you, I went the Saturday before Thanksgiving down to the farm, and that was nice. just the usual suspects. Had a good time, as always. We've never really had fraught holidays or anything like that. So that's usually the only thing people are interested in hearing about. And we just don't ever have anything like that happen. So it was fine. Then on Thanksgiving Day, let's see, we changed out our decorations and put up the tree and stuff. I think we did that the day before, I want to say, Thanksgiving. So we wouldn't have to do it on Thanksgiving. And we spent Thanksgiving, Abby and I, just the two of us, but she roasted turkey anyway and stuff, so she could have turkey on Thanksgiving and have leftovers afterwards. So there was that. And then the kids came over on Black Friday, and we just basically hung out all the whole time. As I told you, we watched old Christopher Reeve movies, which...
Specifically the old Christopher Reeve Superman movies.
Superman movies, yeah.
You weren't watching like Somewhere in Time and shit like that.
Well, that would have been okay.
I've been wondering about rewatching Somewhere in Time. Like, I remember it fondly, but I was also like 8.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's actually any good.
But I don't think I had seen the fourth one, which is, it's weird that I hadn't seen it, because, I mean, I just would have seen it. Back then, I would have seen it. I mean, even if people said it was terrible, and back then you didn't have like Rotten Tomatoes or social media trashing the thing months before it came out. I mean, you didn't really know if it was terrible until you went to see it. But it
also doesn't matter. You watch movies like that, even if they're awful.
Back then, I did.
You still do. You haven't not seen a superhero movie yet. And some of them were awful. And some of them were known to be awful.
I didn't see Catwoman with Halle Berry. I haven't seen that.
I mean, that is really bad.
Maybe that
I finally watched it years later. It is really bad. It is one of those that like is surprisingly bad. Like, you're like, this took effort to be this bad. It's one of those that it's like, no, this is, I'm not sure you can do this on accident. Like, it's
so, I mean, you are right. I do like superhero movies pretty much no matter what the quality. That is true. I mean,
you watched Suicide Squad. You watched Batman v Superman.
I didn't watch Peacemaker. Didn't watch that.
The TV show?
Nope.
That's too bad, because that was good.
I know you think it was good, but I don't know about that.
Because you didn't see it.
And maybe I still will. I don't know. But yeah, that movie was very, very bad. And what I didn't notice this on the other ones, but I noticed on that one that Christopher Reeve was a producer. Like I feel like this was his project. Like, oh, I want to do another Superman kind of thing. And the budget clearly wasn't very much. And the story wasn't very good. But like I told you, I feel like if it had a bigger budget, it could have at least been watchable, which it barely was. Yeah. Then let's see what happened next. I think that was it. Then we just had kind of a nice relaxing weekend after that. So yeah, that's all, nothing fancy to report there. What about yours, your holiday? I know you already told me,
It
but
was
tell the
uneventful
listeners.
for me. A lot of other people had things going on, so I didn't do a lot. The only two things to note over Thanksgiving weekend were I went and saw Ceremony of Eastern Star because my in-laws are members of Eastern Star and they were being installed as new officers in their chapter. And so Trish and I went as audience members to watch that. That was interesting. I am, again, culturally speaking, I'm fascinated by groups like this. And it's really fun. Like later that weekend, my brother-in-law, who hadn't gone because he hadn't actually known and he would have gone if he had, but he and I are talking, and his 17-year-old son is there, and we had to explain what Eastern Star was, which is we had to start because he didn't know what the Masons were.
Oh, well,
So
gosh.
then we had to get back there, and we're both just like, we kind of know. Like I said out loud at the time, I'm like, I'm really tempted to just open Wikipedia on my phone. It's a little bit of a secret society. It's a little bit of a church without the church. It's a little bit the water buffaloes on the Flintstones. Like there's a lot of that. I said any conspiracy cork board has to have the Freemasons on it. It's like a rule. They can be doing different things, but that. And then we were like, and so that's all dudes, and it's still all dudes. And so they needed something for the women folk to do. So they made a spin-off organization called Eastern Star. And Eastern Star now allows men and women, but it still is very female focused, and a lot of the leadership is implanted in the female roles because they are still gender roles. There's the worthy matron, there's the worthy patron, and all that kind of stuff. So that was interesting to see. And then the other thing is we did end up going and seeing Wicked,
Wow.
the movie, part one. And my whole life has been a lie.
Because we were just talking about, didn't we talk on the podcast, right? We talked about.
Yeah, no, the last podcast I said, on the one hand, my family wants to see it. On the other hand, every single musical movie sucks.
No.
Now
No.
I can't say that anymore. Every single musical movie sucks except Wicked Part One. Wicked Part Two still could suck. I don't know yet, but Wicked Part One, it was really good. It was exactly, it kept all the stuff that makes a musical great. It did all the things that can make a movie great. It really was good. It was really good. And shockingly, Ariana Grande absolutely stole the show. Both leads were wonderful. Pretty much every actor did a great job. Michelle Yeoh plays a pretty big part and weirdly felt underutilized. But she did great. But Ariana Grande was the best thing about it. And I understand what I'm saying and what people might decide they hate me now for saying that, and I didn't expect to say it, but she was amazing. She definitely still has the vibe of Kristen Chenoweth's initial performance, but really brings her own to it. She's extremely amusing physically, but not in a slapstick sort of way. Just her mannerisms are designed to be funny, and they really are. And everybody has tremendous chemistry. It is a good old movie. If you don't like musicals, there's no reason you'd like it. But like, if you like the Wicked musical, you actually will like this. And if you think you like the Wicked musical and don't have access to it, this is a pretty good substitute. The same songs. At least in this part, they didn't add in any new songs. They used a lot of the same choreography. They didn't sacrifice the musical quality. Like the singing is really good, the music is really good, but then they did things that you can only do with movies, and it's really the song "What Is This Feeling," which is this duet between Elphaba and Galinda about how much they hate each other, is really cool in a movie thing because they can montage it, and it does really neat stuff that way. And they do a lot of like split screen, so they're in totally different places, but they're singing at each other. It's just a really neat effect.
So I feel like there's a an audience that someone could that now you tell me if this audience exists. I think there's a certain audience that this might appeal to that I don't, maybe nobody's appealed to before, because I think there are fans of the original Wizard of Oz who would not enjoy the book probably. And maybe would not go to see a stage musical. Maybe they don't like musicals in general, but they do like the original Wizard of Oz in spite of it being musical. Do you think they would like this? Do you think this would really appeal to like nostalgic fans of the Wizard of Oz who aren't normally musical fans, but they like the Wizard of Oz?
I mean, I feel like you have defined an extremely narrow demographic.
You think so?
Yes. Don't like musicals, but like Wizard of Oz.
Well, like they grew up with like, it and stuff.
The only time I think that happens is involved with gay peer pressure. Like you can, right, you well, don't have to like musicals, but everybody's like, oh, but you gotta like Wizard of Oz.
But I'm thinking of,
and actually I'm somebody who likes musicals and doesn't particularly like the Wizard of Oz.
Right. But like, because I mean, I knew people.
But I think so. I mean, it depends. Do you like The Wizard of Oz for exactly what it is and don't like stories that try and fuck with it?
Oh.
Because if that's true, don't go anywhere near any Wicked property.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the whole thing is anything that does like the untold story. Well, if you like your story as it was told, don't do this.
Okay.
Although Wicked the book and Wicked the musical do also pull things that weren't in The Wizard of Oz movie but were in L. Frank Baum's books.
Okay. So I guess I didn't really know that.
Up a little bit.
I guess I didn't really know that.
Yeah, because they pull a lot. Well, it takes place in Oz and has lots of different characters in lots of different regions, more so than Wizard of Oz, the movie. And so it deals with a lot of this stuff. And
sure. But I mean, like,
cultures and different. The whole issue of talking animals is like a major plot point within the story.
Right. But I mean, like, the, you know, that green version of the witch is, you know, that's the book. She's not like that in the book. That's a movie invention. So I just thought they just kind of spun off of the film and didn't care that much about the books.
No. No, and she's green in the book.
Mm-mm.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't recall. She's
sorry. Do you mean the L. Frank Baum book?
Yeah.
I thought you meant Wicked. The book.
No.
Like, she's definitely green in that.
Right. That's kind of the point. That's what I'm saying. When Wicked, when the book Wicked became a thing, everything I heard about it was that it was kind of trying to be a prequel to the movie.
I see.
And that, you know, obviously the movie has some connection to the book.
More that than anything. But like, for instance, the sister who becomes the Wicked Witch of the East is in this movie. And things about how her character progresses are things that I believe come from the books, like the L. Frank Baum books.
Oh, okay. I mean,
and so that they did pull stuff from that a little bit.
All right. I mean, I've never read the book. I've just talked to other people who have, and I've asked questions about it. Like, well, what about it? What about this? What about that? And a lot of times, you know, things that I can think of from the book aren't, or at least they don't remember.
Come in here and tell me what you caught. It's fine.
The people I've talked to said, no, that's not necessarily the book. But again, like I said, just the fact that she's green, that's from the movie. It's like the ruby slippers. They weren't ruby in the book. They were silver.
They're not in this one either. They are silver.
Oh, okay. Well,
to be fair, I think they pulled that from the Wicked novel also, because I think that held to it.
They're silver in the Wicked novel.
It's a weird mix. But also, as people who neither of us read the original books, we probably don't have a lot to say.
The original Wicked books? Yeah. No,
the original Frank L. Baum. I thought you were saying you didn't read those.
I did read them. I read all of the books that he wrote, and as soon as other people took over, I didn't read those.
Well, if you mentioned this at breakfast, we could have hashed this out, but now we can't prepare spoilers for people.
Yeah, I read all the I read all his books like 4 or 5 years ago. I thought they were super interesting. But
yeah, certain aspects of characters do, I think, come from those books. Certain ones are designed for this. So, like, and
right.
some are a little bit of both. The Tim Oldman's history in the books sort of plays out here, but it's also another thing. And like, and it's all in the Wicked stuff, it's all precursor, because basically Wicked ends with Wizard of Oz story.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're getting a lot of the backstory leading up to it in a way. So a lot of characters end up becoming characters you recognize from Wizard of Oz that you didn't necessarily at the start of things.
Interesting.
You're like, oh, that person ends up becoming this person and stuff like that. Also, I'm going to be very curious because the movie ends at the intermission of the musical. It's Act One. The Wizard of Oz, Wicked the novel, and Wicked the musical all end differently.
Hmm.
And so I am curious how this is going to end.
Hmm.
Presumably the most likely is they end it like the musical because it's of the musical, but who knows?
I mean, doesn't the Wicked series, the book or whatever, kind of, I mean, they don't ignore the events of the Wizard of Oz. Don't they retell it from a different perspective, sort of?
I only read the first novel.
Oh, okay.
And it basically goes from the birth of the Wicked Witch of the West to basically just after Dorothy leaves at the end of Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
And the events of the Wizard of Oz largely take place off screen.
Okay.
The people talk about it later. I believe the next book deals with a child that appears within the Wicked novel that is not from any other source necessarily. Mm. And it's a sequel and it's their story. And then I don't know anything about the third book, but apparently it is focused on the Cowardly Lion. Mm. But I don't know how or why or where.
Okay.
The novel and the musical are drastically different vibes. And as somebody who likes both of them, I feel like I'm probably unusual. Because you could totally love one of those and hate the other very easily. And I know a lot of people who do.
Yeah, I'm not sure where I'm going to fall. Because when I read the Baum books, I actually really liked them. And so I didn't really get into Wicked because I thought, well, this is just very different.
Which it is.
I'm not sure. You know, it's going to be a very different thing. And, you know, part of that was there's differences between the books and the movies. And I prefer the book, actually, version of The Wizard of Oz, even though I so maybe I'm speaking a little bit for myself as someone and some people I know who is very nostalgic about the original movie. I don't consider myself a big musical lover or anything, but I have lots of nostalgia for the movie. And I know other people who do, too, who ordinarily don't like musicals. So.
I don't believe the second part of that sentence. I believe the first part, which is why I said it's a very narrow demographic, which is to say you.
Yeah, okay, maybe.
Did you ever watch Return to Oz?
Yeah. Yep.
Jesus Christ. I should not have.
Why?
I was very excited for it, and I went to see it in the theater. And I was a young child, and there is a lot of nightmare fuel in that movie.
Well, and there is in the book, too, so that it's based on.
Yep. I occasionally wonder if I should go back and watch it again to see how I feel about it. It's one of those that it came out and it flopped hard, and it's widely considered to be awful, but then there's a definite number of people who are like, actually, it's pretty fucking amazing. and I love seeing it. I love it's little baby Fairuza Balk, and I just love seeing her in it. She's such a weirdo. She's like a real life Wednesday Addams
yeah.
in every role she plays. So it always kind of cracks me up there. But yeah, Mombi and the King of the Dwarves, there's a lot of scary, scary shit in that.
Yeah.
Balls is on another movie here in our house that I don't think I'd ever seen. Airplane! Exclamation point.
Oh, wow. We didn't talk about this.
No. I checked my list. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I told you I saw a movie that was the best movie I see in decades, and you were waiting for that, and I said Airplane. I'll bet that made your butthole clench for a second there. You're like, the fuck?
No, not really. I just want to ask you, what do you make of it? A pterodactyl.
The parts that hold up real well, and the parts that don't hold up do not hold up real well.
Is that the one with Audrey Meadows in it, Speak and Jive? Is that?
No, not Audrey. Remember, Barbara Billingsley.
Oh.
Mrs. Cleaver.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Yeah, Mrs. Cleaver.
Barbara Billingsley.
Not Audrey Meadows. Wait, who's Audrey Meadows again?
You made that up.
No, is she from...
she's Aubrey Plaza's rural cousin?
No, is she from Jackie Gleason? Is that Aubrey Meadows? No. Now I'm going to look it up. That's what we do
now.
I
don't know what you mean from Jackie Gleason. Do you mean his child?
No, Audrey Meadows is from the show Jackie Gleason had called The Honeymooners.
The Honeymooners?
Yeah, Audrey Meadows.
No,
I was getting her confused with Barbara Billingsley. You're right. And
Barbara Billingsley speaking Jive because she took a course. She took a course a year of Jive in college. That one holds up real well in a way that it feels like it shouldn't, but it really does. Then there's other bits like Peter Graves asking the boy all the questions about, you ever seen a grown man naked?
A Turkish prison.
Yeah, I'm like, that's no. It's also racist as fuck.
Yeah, like lots of movies were back then.
Because an ongoing joke is Robert Hayes' character telling the flashbacks to the people sitting next to him, and they hate it. And a lot of them are very fucked up racial stereotypes, including, unfortunately, James Hong, who commits seppuku rather than talk to this guy. It's also part of an old era where it's a PG movie that's got some boobs in it. Just for a second, as like a gag, but they're there. Back in the day, it is weird to be like, yeah, no, censorship really is actually worse in some ways now than it was back in the day. But yeah, it's funny. It's good. I'm glad I saw it. It does crack me up because there are so many people who I only know as comedic actors, and they're in this as comedic actors, but that wasn't how they started. Leslie Nielsen's an obvious one. Other than, I think, the Creepshow movie, I've never seen him in a dramatic role. And I know he played them back in the day, but I've never seen him do it. Lloyd Bridges, I technically have seen some of his dramatic work from, like, the 50s, but I mostly just know him as this fucking goofball.
It's a bad day to quit smoking.
Yep, bad day to quit sniffing glue. Bad day, so many of them. Robert Stack is in it. Which I've seen him some, but I mostly just think of him as the lead, the host of Unsolved Mysteries. The autopilot is an inflatable pilot, and there are several jokes related to him. He has his own IMDb page with a bio and everything.
So
apparently there are a handful of those. Apparently Wilson the Volleyball from Castaway also has an IMDb page.
I've got two main questions to ask you about this.
Yes.
I'm not at all surprised you've never seen this movie. I think I would have guessed that you wouldn't enjoy it because it's a very particular kind of humor that I'm not sure I would have guessed that you would like.
But you have to remember, some of my favorite movies in my teenage years were the Hot Shots movies.
Oh, okay.
and Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Okay, well,
so
sure.
You can do a spoof that I like, but I have to feel like you're trying. Not just referencing something and being like, wasn't this stupid? Like, which is so many of the Friedman Seltzer ones are that. I mean, it's not, I don't need to see it again. I'm not going around recommending it to people.
But I mean, like, jokes like he had a drinking problem, you know, and he just.
See, I fucking love that. Because they committed.
Yeah.
Like, the first time he's like, I had a drinking problem, and he misses his mouth. And I was like, that's pretty good. And they do it like four more times.
Yep.
Without referencing, he's just like, has a drink. And he just, and I'm like,
My family still uses that joke with like little kids who like spill or whatever. He's got a drinking problem.
The weird bit where Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is one of the pilots, but pretending he's not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and the kid is like talking to him. That's, I love that. That's great. yeah, some of it really, really hits. But some of it, it's and I know he's not involved at all, but it's very Mel Brooks. It's old school Monty Python, and like the things that hit for me hit hard, and the rest of it is trash.
Okay, so my second question is the race angle. So when you go back to this era, there's a lot of like, you know, even Blazing Saddles really leans into it, actually, even though Blazing Saddles arguably makes fun of racist people and racist attitudes. Yes. It tells a lot of racist, jokes that are supposed to be funny because it's racial stereotype. So this is my question. And this is my question to you, as an anthropologist. I know you probably hate it when I do that, but I just think of you.
I love it. I've never made any money from my degree, so I might as well do something.
Yeah, because I mean, I think you've got a good anthropological sense. Do you think that it rep? I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if it represents, in some ways, a more racially open-minded time when people can joke about these things. You know. And everyone can think it's funny. And to put it another way, I sometimes wonder if when we are more sophisticated about race and less fraught about it, that you know, racial stereotype jokes won't go away. They just won't seem mean, or you know, there'll be things that everyone can laugh at and have a good time with. Much the same way that, like, I think people can tell jokes about white people and everyone can laugh at it and usually does, including white people. But that's because we still have this, we have a heritage of not being in an oppressed place.
Yeah,
right?
You're the dominant culture. So,
right.
It's always punching up when you make fun of white people.
Sure. But if I imagine that there will come a time where, or at least I hope, there'll come a time where, you know, nobody is oppressed or left out in the cold because of the color of their skin or of any other immutable characteristic. And so then it makes me wonder, well, will people just forget those types of jokes, or will they be able to tell them and without any hard feelings, and everyone can laugh and be good natured about it? Or maybe that's the wrong way to think of it. I mean, because when I look at the 70s, it seems like people had a really, like, I remember growing up, the people around me, even though, you know, they were rural white farmers or whatever, but they seemed to have very progressive attitudes about things, at least in my memory. Maybe I remember it wrong. But one of the things that made it seem like that was you saw these movies and TV shows and people could talk about difficult things and laugh. Everybody. I mean, not just white people, but everybody could. All in the Family, I think, is a good example. I mean, I realize there are some people that didn't like it because satire is tricky, right? Like sometimes it's like, well, some people aren't going to see this as satire. Some people are going to think Archie Bunker's the hero or whatever. But I think the vast majority of people did not. White people, black people, whoever they were, saw that this was satire They could all laugh about it. And something about that seems like being in a better place, but I don't know. So I'm asking you what you think.
Well, I'm going to address this indirectly by starting with pretty much every assumption you mentioned, I don't believe to be true. I don't believe the people you grew up with actually had progressive views. I don't think most people knew that Archie wasn't the hero. A lot of people did, but not ever. Plenty of people, I think, didn't. I think a lot of people were deeply hurt by some of the shit that happened back in those days. I think...
Oh, well, sure.
I don't think it was any better, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
But there's an evolution in how you're allowed to deal with this stuff.
Mm.
In the very beginning, you couldn't say shit about shit.
Okay.
These are the eras where the word pregnant wasn't allowed to be said on the Lucille Ball show, even though she was pregnant. With or going back where you couldn't use the word toilet on a TV show.
Okay.
So you certainly couldn't fuck around with anything approaching any demographic group at all. And then we got to a point, which I think is more typified in like the 70s or whatever, where white people just did whatever the fuck they wanted. And you got actually a lot of really terrible stereotypes thrown in there. And there were exceptions. There is stuff in Blazing Saddles that is really good material that deals with that. A lot of that comes from the fact that a lot of Blazing Saddles was written by Richard Pryor.
Mm.
And then, as I've talked about before, the 90s was when we were all like, oh, we need to talk about this stuff more. We need to talk about racism and sexism and things like that. But it was much later that we figured out, oh, how we talk about that actually matters. So the 90s was full of tremendous breadth representationally, and it was all pretty damn offensive.
Oh.
I've talked about this before. If you look back at In Living Color, In Living Color was one of the most progressive, ceiling-breaking shows ever, and you watch it now, and it's just racist stereotype after racist stereotype. And both things are true. That show was huge and incredibly important and influential and is one of the most fucking offensive things.
Okay, but
most
like I'm...
Most of the sketches are just, here's a terrible stereotype of either a racial caricature or a racist caricature, and we're just going to watch them run roughshod over people.
Okay. But like I remember watching Good Times and The Jeffersons and... You know, there a lot of shows were just. I mean,
I think you're talking all of Norman Lear, and I definitely think that's what Norman Lear was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I remember these being really popular shows. I remember them talking about race too. By the way, I mean, not always, but a lot of episodes would talk about these things directly, and then you know,
and other things. Maude, which was another spinoff and another Norman Lear.
Oh yeah, Maude.
She had a fucking abortion.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, they aired that two-part episode one time and then didn't air it for many, many years afterward.
Yeah, Maude, we watched that. That was really popular. And we watched Sesame Street, which had, diverse people in the neighborhood there. And then sometimes they would teach you the Spanish word for a thing. I mean, I don't know. That's just, and then Mr. Rogers. Like, all of this stuff seemed to be sending a message of, hey, you know, we're all human beings and we should all love and respect each other, and things like skin color and all that stuff shouldn't matter.
No, exactly. It was the I don't see color approach.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
We're just all human, because you would occasionally get a little thing, like if you ever watch Mr. Rogers talking to the 9-year-old boy who does breakdancing. That's amazing. There is an episode where he meets a kid, a little black kid, who does breakdancing, and he teaches Mr. Rogers about it, and Mr. Rogers even tries to do some popping and locking, and it's the greatest thing in the history of the world, because he absolutely approaches this kid on his level. There is no patronizing, there is nothing like that. He's just like, oh, here is a person who has a skill I don't know, I want to hear about it. And it's unbelievable. And so you have moments like that. Or this episode, we're going to see a traditional dance by whatever ethnographic minority we've brought in for this episode. We would have occasional things like that, but for the most part, it was like, no, we're all the same. We're all white people deep down inside. But I think Norman Lear was really trying to say something else. How successful it was, I don't know. I don't think this is ever a thing that's going to go away, because it's a thing I struggle with now. The jive talking scene in Airplane, I think it is hilarious. I'm also uncomfortable with thinking it's hilarious. Because I'm like, is this? Like, I mean, it's real close to the legitimate creation of the discipline of Ebonics. Like, we are saying, oh, these are black people. They speak a different language. Which is clever the way they're doing it, because the slang makes a difference. But I'm like, it's in a weird place. It's a similar thing when I see a comedian of immigrant parents doing impressions of their parents with strong, in my mind, stereotypical accents. And I'm like, they're just doing an impression of their mom. That's what their mom sounds like. But also, without any context, this is just somebody doing a really heavy, stereotypical Asian accent or Nigerian accent or whatever. Or the prime example, black people using the N-word with each other. How do we feel about that? I'm like, I'm not going to stop them. I kind of wish they wouldn't. I definitely don't think other people should, but I also think it's crazy to be like, this is a word that only these people can use and these people can't. But I very much believe, like, I feel so conflicted about that. And because this is all intensely subjective, both comedy and being offended are intensely subjective things.
Right.
It's just always going to be there in one form or another. And that I get real tricky where I'm like, this makes me feel weird. Is it okay given who the comedian is? Another one, I talked with Trish about this. So there is a type of stand-up. I mean, certain stand-up people, they really adopt a character. And often it's like a caricature. Like, they're just so not how a real person would be. And that's part of the joke. And a very common one is shitty entitled asshole, specifically often really racist shitty entitled asshole. And the joke isn't the racist humor, the joke is how shitty that person is for feeling that way. And there are versions of this that I find hilarious, and there are versions of this that I find deeply offensive. And I've had a hard time expressing or even determining for myself what the difference is. And it's something to be with, is the character presented as a shithead, or is the character like, do the jokes include like how difficult their life is and how fucked up things are because of these views they hold? Or is it just, well, and you can tell because some of these, Anthony Jeselnik is a great example of this. Anthony Jeselnik has this whole persona of just being this sexist, entitled asshole. And he does it really well, and he is a very competent comedian. He also has a problem with a lot of his fan base don't think he's being ironic. And I'm like, if your fan base can't tell you're being ironic, it's probably not a character I like. And as it is, I don't like Jeselnik's stuff. He's very good at what he does. I don't like it. So, yeah, this is always going to be in there because there is no defining characteristic. It's all in each individual, especially when it comes to comedy. But we don't have a lot of time, and I have to talk about the important thing, our feature presentation.
Okay. Sorry.
I saw a movie. Well, you didn't say Wings of Desire, and for that, I hate you forever.
Okay.
And I really loved it when I saw it, as we talked about. And then I saw a movie that I loved even more. And while it's a very subjective thing, I'm not going to say this is the best film I have seen in many years, but it is the best film for me that I have seen in many years. That being said, it's not real specific. I recommend this highly.
Okay. To people.
It's a movie I've known was coming for a while, just sort of quietly. I've been very excited about, and I recently found out it was available. And the other night, Trish was like, "Do we have any movies we want to watch that are dramas?" And I'm like, "No, we almost never have any dramas." And I'm like, "Wait, this one is a drama." And so we watched it. I think we paid like $3 for it on Prime. It is called 9 Days. The premise is basically within some sort of non-temporal space that I think is just Utah salt flats, but I mean within the story you're outside of creation. A man interviews several newly created souls and takes them through an interview and testing process to determine which single one will be granted the privilege of life and being born as a human being in the world. It's a pretty arty film, so if somebody really doesn't like that kind of stuff, they might not like it. It's one of those, like, things happen in it, but it's one of those movies that the point is not to tell a story. The point is to get you thinking. Mm-hmm. It also has a phenomenal cast. Our main guy is Winston Duke, who I love. He's like everywhere these days. He's in a lot of stuff. I keep thinking of him as the leader of the, well, I need to look at the camera, baby girl. You can't just keep walking. I always think of him as the leader of the monkey tribe in Black Panther.
Oh.
M'Baku. But he's in a bunch of stuff right now, and he's really having a moment. I love him to death. I hope he's filling a little bit of the Jonathan Majors vacuum now that that fucker has gone to jail. But he's wonderful in this. Zazie Beetz, who nobody is talking about enough. She was the female lead in Atlanta. She had a sort of throwaway part in Deadpool 2. She is amazing. She's an Alan Alda. Like, she's always the same person, but she melds that into whatever the character is, and you believe it completely. It's amazing. Tony Hale is in this.
Oh.
Uncle Buster from Arrested Development.
Right.
One of the Skarsgårds is in it. I can't keep track of them, but there's a Skarsgård in it. And... here's the amazing one. Benedict Wong is in this, sporting a Northern English accent. And I'm like, this is crazy. Why does he sound like that? And then I'm like, wait a second. I think he's British. And I looked it up, and the fucker was born just out of Salford, which is a suburb of Manchester. He is Northern English. This may not be how he talks normally now, but it's definitely how he talked when he was younger. And in fact, through the process, I discovered recently there was a British sitcom that ran for 3 series whose primary focus was Sean Locke, who's dead now, but I love him, and he wrote and starred in it, and his roommate flat, a young man named Errol, played by their pretty much unknown Benedict Wong, with an accent so northern it's hard to understand. Like, it's amazing. And I'm so excited because Benedict Wong's amazing. This is the first time I've seen him in a role where him being Asian had nothing to do with it. And that's probably why he got to just have his own accent. Like, it was a part that it just could have been a white person and it would have been fine. And I love... I've talked about this before. This is the Marley Matlin being in a role where it's not about her being deaf. Like, I love when the thing that gets you get cast without it. Because Benedict Wong's amazing, but he always plays the sort of gruff Asian man. And that's not his hit. He was a jobbing actor in the UK for years and years and years. And he does a great job here, but I just love that I'm like, oh, this had nothing to do with him being Asian. How lovely. It's a phenomenal movie, and it really makes you think about existence and the point of existence and sort of consciousness and how one identifies oneself. And I don't know, I loved it. I loved it to death. It's the best movie I've seen in many years. Highly recommend. It's a little over 2 hours. It is sort of an arty film. I mean, it's not fast-paced or anything. So people who don't like that kind of stuff probably still won't like it, but
It's called what again?
9 days. At the time when I saw it, I said, I don't know what I was expecting from this movie, but I'm pretty sure this is what I was hoping it was going to be.
I think that's Bill Skarsgård in it.
Okay. I lose track of the Skarsgårds.
yeah.
Was that Pennywise or was that the Crow or is that the same?
Both. Guy? Both. Yeah.
Are they Skarsgård. All one Skarsgård? I never knew. I mean, there's Stellan. He's like old.
No, there's other Skarsgårds, but he played. So the first time I ever saw Bill Skarsgård, he was playing a vampire in some TV show, which I don't even remember what the name of it was, which is weird because his brother played a vampire in True Blood. But but then the kind of the next thing I ever heard of him doing was Pennywise. And then I heard that he was going to
You know, he just can do that eye thing.
Yeah.
Bill Skarsgård just has the ability to do that eye thing.
I heard that.
Scared the shit out of Bill Hader, apparently. Because seriously, they weren't filming. And he's like, so they just put in and post that happened. How's the effect? I was like, I can just do it. And he just did it. And he's like, ah!
So
of course, it's only in the last like 5 or 10 years that I've figured out that Peter Sarsgaard is unrelated to the Skarsgårds.
Right, yeah.
I thought that was all a dinosaur.
Although I like him. I like him too.
I love Peter Sarsgaard.
Yeah, he's really good. He was in the Batman movie too. It's really good.
That's good. Because yeah, I love him, but I haven't seen him in a lot recently that I've enjoyed. Not his fault, but just things.
I mean, that TV show Bill Skarsgård was in where he was a vampire. I didn't like it very much. We watched it for a while though, and I thought he doesn't seem to be as strong an actor as his family. But now I've seen him in other things, I realize he was making those choices for the character, and I just didn't like those choices, I guess. But I've seen him in other things now, and all the Skarsgårds do a really good job. I mean, there's a reason they get cast and stuff. They're good, I think.
Dynasty families. I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast, so just in case. Nobody watched Chaos on Netflix. It's not bad. We kind of enjoyed it. But it leaves a tremendous amount unanswered. It has a ton of cliffhangers, and it's been canceled. So you will get no resolution of anything. But it was a fun time-ish. But yeah, you should know it. Also, if you go see Wicked, you can pretty much see Jeff Goldblum playing the same role. This is another fun thing. The junket stuff for Wicked. I mean, there's been all sorts of crazy things on there and things people are making fun of a lot. But the big one is the women, when they're interviewed, are getting asked serious questions about the movie and about how they determine their roles and stuff like that. And the men, which is the guy who's playing Fierro and then Jeff Goldblum, in their junkets, are talking about the things like how short Fierro's shorts are when he's offset and things about their, like, all the flimsy, unnecessarily sexual things that usually are what the women get asked.
The women get asked, yeah.
And I don't think it was deliberate by anybody's stretch. And, of course, it's Goldblum, so he's eating it up. And he's like, yeah, when he wears those shorts, we just say, release the Kraken. And, like, they're just into it. But it's, like, it's very similar. Trish always talks about this during the Barbie movie junket stuff. Ryan Gosling was very, like, would force them to not focus on him. He's like, I'm definitely not the main character. And they would try and do the same thing where they'd ask the fluff questions to Margot Robbie. But, like, Ryan Gosling fought for it hard. But, yeah, this apparently, that's just how it's happening. That's so fun. But, yeah, check out 9 Days. It's very, very good. Check out Wings of Desire. It's also very, very good.
We intend to do it. It's on our
I
list.
Mean, it's no City of Angels, but, you know.
But 9 days, that's a that was released back in 2020.
No.
Well, I think that's what it says. 2021, I guess.
Really?
Although Wiki says 2020, Google says 2021. I don't know which one it is. Maybe it hit like a film festivals or something in 2020. I don't know.
I'm going to be really annoyed if it, I've been waiting all these years. For
right. So, yes, according to Wiki.
I didn't hear about it until like a year ago.
According to Wiki, January 27th, 2020, it was at Sundance. And then it was released, you know, to the general public, I guess, in July of 2021. That's a long time between the Sundance and the theatrical release.
And it's a long time before now.
Yeah. Tony Hale. Well,
I don't think it is impacted by, you don't look at it in a different light post-COVID, so it's fine. But yeah, highly recommend it. Very good.
I'll have to check it out. I've never heard of it before at all.
I hadn't either until I, like I said, just right at this point, YouTube tosses me a lot of trailers because I like to watch them.
Mm.
And then Church makes me watch ones that she found. So it just popped up somewhere. And it may be some of those people I'm very into. So.
Oh, so, I see. The gap between it hitting the film festival and being released was because of the pandemic. That makes sense. Because the film festival was in January 2020. And the pandemic didn't really become a thing until February March. Or March. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
All right. We're out of time, so I know you're playing Baldur's Gate 3, but you can't talk about it now. So, too bad.
Well, we'll still be playing it next time. I can talk about it next time a little bit. Yeah.
All right. Well, now that I know you're doing it, maybe I should get in on it even faster so we can start comparing and contrasting. Although I'd be worried about spoilers because there's just different directions to go. But, yeah.
That's true. Depending on, yeah, a lot of different factors.
All right. Email us, people, please. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com. Please give us emails. I'm running out of insults to give to William.
No, you're not.
That's all we got going on.
You'll never run out.
No, I thought it was a bottomless well, but I mean, don't get me wrong, I could repeat some old ones, but that's not a good podcast. I need to get my groove back. I am uninspired these days. I'll just be like, yeah, you suck. Nothing. So yeah, so email us so I don't have to spend as much time doing that. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. Tell me your views on all the things. Have you seen 9 days? Will you see 9 days? Have you seen Wings of Desire? See some movies that we saw and then tell us your thoughts on them.
Yeah.
And otherwise, I think just like listen again next week. That's how it works.
That works.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.